All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Side Hustle City podcast. Today, Kyle and I have Mavis Linneman, who owns a company called Delish Dish, and she also owns a consumer packaged goods company. She makes jams and jellies, and that company is called Made by Mavis. Welcome to the podcast, Mavis.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me. Excited to be on today.
Yeah, and as everybody knows, the goal of this podcast is to introduce our listeners to successful people in the community that have kind of taken the reins of their life and decided to start their own business. And Mavis is definitely one of them. And just recently, Mavis was awarded a national award by the Small Business Administration. She is the Kentucky Small Business Person of the Year. And Mavis, can you talk a little bit about that award and how you applied for it? Or did they just find you? How did that work?
No, so my mentor, Carlin Stam, I met him through Aviatra and Bad Girl Ventures, and he's been my mentor for about 9 years now, 8 years now. He had told me, well, previously I actually won 2018 Kentucky Women-Owned Business of the Year. So I knew about the award, and Carlin suggested that we apply for the whole state award rather than the women-owned business of the year. And we applied, and he wrote me a very nice letter, and they kind of vet you and follow up with all your mentors or people in the community. And I'm not sure how many people I competed against, but I think a good number. And then they ended up choosing me as the business person of the year, which was super exciting. I was supposed to go to D.C. to accept the award, but, you know, COVID. So we did the award ceremony at our kitchen, which was still really nice. And my whole family got to attend, which wouldn't have been the case in D.C. So silver lining there.
Which is really awesome. And so you've won other awards in the past. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Sure. I won the 2018 Kentucky Women-Owned Business, which was really cool. I've also won from the Northern Kentucky Chamber. I don't know what year it was, but it was when I was a startup. So I won Startup Spirit Award through the Northern Kentucky Chamber. And I've also won the Entrepreneurial Award for the Next Generation Leaders Award Ceremony. And that's also a chamber. And I won that, I think, in 2017. So I've been very lucky in that my community knows me and appreciates my work and what we do. And somehow I keep getting chosen and spotlighted. So I'm very grateful for that.
You discussed having a mentor. So I think it'd be a good opportunity now to start from the beginning, like what got you interested in owning your own business, how you got there, and the role that the mentor played in helping to achieve success. Because we've mentioned mentors in the past. A major hurdle that a lot of people have to get over is the fact that they're afraid to ask for help, and they're afraid look like Ash was on a couple episodes ago, and he was talking about afraid to look like a dumbass in front of someone who's successful. So can you just take us through what inspired you to get started, your thought process, and what made you reach out to a mentor, or if it just kind of worked its way naturally, organically, just to let people get an idea about how a successful person starts from, you know, the idea and becomes an award-winning business owner.
Yeah, because our thing is, how do you turn your side hustle into your main hustle?
And this definitely was a side hustle for me. So back before I started Delish Dish, I was a journalist, went to journalism school, got a BA, went to Syracuse University. I worked in publishing, and I lived in Philadelphia for a while. And then I moved to Chicago, and I was working as a freelancer there. And I kind of fell in love with cooking after college. And when I was in Chicago, I moved to Chicago, I didn't know anyone. And so I started hosting dinner parties to make friends, to feed people. And I also started a blog called the Kitchen Bitch Blog. So I was just cooking all of the time when I wasn't freelancing, hosting these parties. And I just was like obsessed. I was cooking all of the time. And so I just was like, I need to do this. I need to kind of go to culinary school, I think, and get this degree, because who's going to take me seriously if I don't have a degree in cooking? And my parents were like, well, we just paid for you to go to undergrad. So like, why would we pay for you to go to culinary school? So I was like, okay, I'll pay for it myself. So I was in Chicago. I decided to go to culinary school. I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I ended up signing up for catering and personal chef, and I worked in full time, and I was going to culinary school at night and then still doing my blog. And I was earning a little bit of money through the blog, but not a bunch, but it was enough for me to like get my recipes really underway. And at that same time, my mom also got me a canning pot for Christmas. And then I fell in love with canning. And that's sort of how I fell into jam at the same time. So culinary school, working full time, making jam on the weekends. No one else liked catering in my culinary school. Catering's like one of those, I don't know, professions for crazy people, because not only are you cooking for hundreds of people, but you're doing it in unknown conditions. So, you know, every kind of weather, the power goes out, you're cooking in a box, you're cooking outdoors, you know, no one else liked it, but I love a good challenge. So I fell in love with catering, and I just knew if I started a business in Chicago, I was going to be a small fish in a big pond. And I'd been away from Cincinnati for about 10 years, and all my siblings, I have triple brothers and sisters, were all moving home. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go move home, start my business. My parents have all kinds of connections here. They own Lineman Funeral Homes, and it's been around for 7 generations of my family. So they know everyone in Northern Kentucky. I have the contacts to launch this business. So I came back here and I launched Delish Dish out of my home in beginning of 2012. And I was still working full-time as a freelancer. Freelancer, you can work anywhere. Doing the business on the side and doing all the food, doing the dishes, doing the marketing. And about a year in, I was, you know, working 80 hours a week. And I was like, I need help. And my mom told me about Bad Girl Ventures. It's an accelerator program for women-owned businesses.
Which now is now Aviatra. Aviatra, or Aviatra. Is that how you pronounce it?
Aviatra. I'm always... I always say Aviatra, but they correct me. It's Aviatra.
There we go.
Like Aviatra Accelerators. I went to Bad Girl, fell in love with it. It completely changed my life. They do all kinds of speed networking, and, you know, being a business owner, especially when you first start, is super lonely because you're doing everything by yourself. Your friends think you're crazy because you're spending all of your time working, like all the time building up something.
What about your friends too? So I know there's a lot of people that deal with pressure from their friends, or they look at their friends' lives. They're working 9-to-5 jobs. They come home at 5 o'clock. They, you know, have time to play with their kids. They can veg out on TV. You can't do any of that when you're a business owner.
No, you can. And my friends, you know, and it was my family. When people ask me what the hardest part of my business starting it was, I would say it was training my family to know that I was going to show up differently than I had been in the past, because previously, you know, I did a lot of stuff for my family, and I would do all the family gatherings and I'd do all this stuff, but I was super busy working full time and then doing this at night and on the weekends. And, you know, my family was really supportive, but they also were like, why don't you want to hang out with us? And my friends were like, why are you only talking about your business? I'm like, well, this is my life now. So
yeah.
I live here and this is what I do. I mean, now, you know, 10 years later, I have a real life again, and I have a kid, and, you know, I can have a weekend, but I still, you know, it took, I don't know, 7 years for me to get my business to a place where I can step back sometimes and live a normal person life, and mostly 9-to-5, I guess, of catering. So I still work weekends, but not every weekend anymore. But that's definitely the most difficult part. I got married and started the business immediately afterwards, and I had in-laws who had started a catering company and had not been successful. They didn't think I could do it. And I was like, I'm going to do this. And that, for me, failure wasn't an option. But I'm not a 9-to-5 person. I am not an office person. It just like makes me want to die inside.
No, I totally understand that. Yeah, I can't do it either. I think everyone we've had on the show who's an entrepreneur has that same mentality where it's like they just can't have their lives dictated by someone else, and they can't be pigeonholed into a job, right? Like where you're going to come in and you're just going to do this all day.
Where I come in at is that I'm at the ground floor of the entrepreneurship. I'm like, Adam invited me to do this, and I'm thankful I get to do the podcast, but I'm very novice at this. So I know there are a lot of people listening to the podcast that are in the same stage I am. You said that you got to the point where you're like, I need help. What led, like what made, was it just the amount of hours? And then when you did get the help, sorry, I do these two part questions. So when you did reach out for the help, Was there like a thought process like, oh, this is overwhelming. I feel like I'm going to have to do too much stuff to be able to stay with the Bad Girl Ventures requirements? Or was it just something that fell into place and you found that it wasn't nearly as intimidating as I thought it was going in?
Yeah. So signing up for the program, I mean, I knew I was ready to do it. And it was for people who are getting ready to launch a business. So I already had like basic things done, but I'd never written a business plan. I was just, you know, shooting from the hip. So for me, you know, when I walked into Bad Girl Ventures and they had like this 10-week plan, and over the course of those 10 weeks, I would develop different sections of my business and then write a plan for it. And then at the end, you know, I sat down and I didn't leave my seat for, I don't know, 24, 36 hours. And I wrote this crazy business plan that I still refer to and refresh sometimes for Delish Dish. But so for me, it was giving me a framework to start a business, because a lot of people just go and, you know, a lot of people take so much time to start that they never get anywhere. So I just started and then went back and did the framework. And of course, you know, you make mistakes doing that, but you learn doing it. And then once I got locked into Bad Girl Ventures, I realized that there was all these other free services that I didn't know existed. For instance, Score. So Bad Girl Ventures paired you with a mentor. And my mentor then was fine. He wasn't like, he was somewhat helpful, but when I met Carlin at the end of my 10 weeks, I asked him if he would be my mentor, and he agreed. And I had also gone through the Small Business Development Center, which is the also the SBA, and they're all over the country. It is a completely complimentary resource. And I met Rebecca Volpe there, and I also have met with her for, I don't know, 6 years. And they're both completely free consultants to me. They know me so well. They help me with my goals. They've helped me look at businesses, like at purchasing land. They've helped me go through, you know, marketing or staffing issues. And for me, just having that, so many people don't reach out for help. And it's nice to have a third person, you know, another sounding board, because in your head, you're like, am I doing this? Am I crazy? Is this going to work? I don't know. Like, you know, so having someone to kind of keep you in check and be like, oh, you're moving in the right direction, or no, I think you should reconsider this, or that doesn't sound profitable. Have you considered this?
It even sounds like you've had a lot of people. I mean, you just starting out your business, you already had your in-laws kind of poo-pooing the idea because it's something that they had tried and it didn't work for them. What made you so confident that it would work for you though?
So back when I moved back to Cincinnati, you know, the food scene hadn't hit here yet. And I had lived in Philadelphia. Syracuse doesn't have much, but I lived in Philadelphia and Chicago, right? Both amazing food cities. And I was a big traveler. I love to travel. That's what I try and do when I have free time. And I just knew Cincinnati didn't have the food yet. Now Cincinnati has a great food scene, right? Like it boomed between.
Amazing.
But when I first started, like nothing was here yet. I mean, I think Sennett started when I moved back and that was 10 years ago.
It was just hot dogs, fancy hot dogs. Now we have
fancy hot dogs. Yeah. And people just saw this niche here because I had spent so much time in these major cities where the food was in crazy. And I love to cook authentic global cuisine. So many caterers are just like boring, dry wedding chicken. And I wanted to have, I just knew that if I could get it out there, that this is something that I think people would purchase. People want it, and it still is.
It is, but this is another theme that comes up a lot, is timing for a business, for the success of businesses.
Right.
We've heard that a couple times. When Brian Burke was in here, he was talking about Sell Your Mac and how he started selling people's used phones or doing consignment for Mac products like laptops and used phones when he was in college, and the timing made a lot of sense. We hear this over and over again, I think, with entrepreneurs, is that a huge part of your success is involved in the timing of what you're doing and understanding your market. Is what it sounds like I'm hearing from you is you really understood the market. You got out of your own environment. You went other places. You said, hey, this is a trend. It hasn't come to my city yet, so I'm going to take advantage of this. And now's the right time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was the end of the recession. So, you know, it's kind of rough starting then. Everything boomed, you know, a couple years after the recession, and it took me a while to get traction and to get people to know me and things like that. But my business definitely boomed and grew as, you know, now everyone's like, what's gluten free? And we do a lot of vegan and like all of these things that you necessarily couldn't get before. You know, now it's, no one even thinks about it. Of course there's gluten free options. Of course, you know, but not many people are like looking for a 200 person vegan wedding. And I did that like 3 or 4 years ago. So it's interesting to see. Yeah, I mean, the timing is huge and I didn't know it was going to be huge. But to me, it's what I loved and wanted to do. And it just worked out, you know, and my mom and dad were like, you're charging too much. And then I found out, you know, I definitely wasn't charging enough. But things that you learn as time goes on. And yeah, it just worked out very well for us. We're very fortunate.
Going back to this, your family support and the timing, and these sound like things that a lot of business owners need. And as a woman-owned business, there's unique mm-hmm. challenges that you face. And I believe, right. you know, there's a lot of listeners that we have that are woman-owned businesses. If mm-hmm. if I'm a woman out there right now and I'm thinking about starting a cooking business or a catering business, what's different now than maybe when you started your business? And would you suggest someone get into the industry in somewhere in the Midwest right now?
I mean, it is pretty saturated. I mean, catering's always been super competitive, and that's the other reason why my in-laws and stuff were like, ooh, I don't know. And so really coming up with that niche was really important because there's, well, it'll be really interesting to see with COVID what happens, because like I'm a pretty small catering company and I can contract, you know, we're already a seasonal business, so we can kind of contract and expand as needed with our seasonal staff. But, you know, I know some of my competitors have lost millions of dollars this year because they have so much property and everyone's canceling. And, you know, obviously we're not doing amazing this year, but I, you know, we might break even, which for a catering company in the middle of a pandemic is, I think, pretty good.
it's kind of like from Forrest Gump, where they're on they have the USS Ginny, and that's the only ship they have, and everybody else's yes. fleet sink in a hurricane, and you're able to pick up the market share.
Right, right. So to start a business right now, yeah, I mean, I think there's so many people who want to start food businesses right now. So in order to do so, you know, I think it's really important to have a business plan or a thought about it. Or just to start, you know, as so many people say with food businesses, you know, or any business, start small, test it. And if it works, great. Like, don't invest, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars into your, like, don't go open a storefront right now. Like, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah,
like,
retail, you know what I mean? Is not test doing very well. Yeah.
Well, how?
And right. Like, now's not the time to open a storefront. Like, maybe a food truck. I would never want to be on a food truck. It seems like so hot and sweaty. Yeah, I mean, it's saturated, but it was, you know, catering's always been super, super competitive. So, I mean, but I end up competing against the same companies most of the time. I know all my main competitors, but there's definitely some smaller companies that I'm sure they'll find their niche, and it might be like super high-end fine dining or super casual, you know, drop and go individual meals or something like that. There's definitely, you know, it'll be interesting to see with the pandemic how things change permanently and what people like. I think as soon as everyone gets vaccinated, everyone's going to have a lot of parties. But until then, you know, we're doing things a little bit differently than we used to. I don't know. It's an interesting time to start a business. And being for me, I don't think food service necessarily, it used to be such a male dominated, like chef, you know, men chef, but I don't necessarily think of it that way anymore. So I don't think like being a woman in this business is as hard, minus like, you know, if you want to have kids, et cetera, you have to realize that you're not going to have your weekends home with your kids. So, you know, I take like Mondays and Wednesdays to do that because I know my weekends are shot.
And that's a big compromise. I think it could be also one of the things that prevent a lot of women from jumping into entrepreneurship. Is this?
Oh, for sure.
Do you feel that way? I don't want to say that as a guy and just assume.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it stops them from being entrepreneurs, but I think it stops them in a lot. Like for me, I mean, we waited. I'm 36 and I just had my first baby this year. And, we've been married for 9 years. So I, but the reason, you know, my husband's wanting kids, but we couldn't have a baby yet because I didn't have the time or my business has been my child for 9 years. You know, I had to get my business. I think it's possible to be a woman and business owner with like a family, but I think you have to get your business. You're going to have to sacrifice, you know, like you're probably not going to have four kids and start a business.
Your husband had to put off having a child, but he also gets to eat delicious food all the time. So
correct. He did get very spoiled at that. Although once I actually started the business and he had to help me clean and do all the stuff, which was a whole nother conversation.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I was working 80 hours a week. So I'm like, I can't cook you delicious meals all the time. I'm working 80 hours a week. So like, you got to like sweep the floor. But you know, gender roles that we have a pretty good, my husband loves to clean and I don't love cleaning and I cook. So we have a nice like division of labor. Yeah. I mean, it definitely still falls more on the woman and, you know, that's something that us as a couple, and I'm sure everyone, you know, struggles with because things fall on, you know, the woman's shoulders and, you know, you just have to get to a place where you as a couple, you can decide who's going to do what.
Or there's like a guilt. I hear a lot of times there's like a guilt that you feel like I'm away from my child or I'm away from my, you know, my house. Like, do you ever feel that? Or has that been an issue for you at all?
I love to work. So for me, like I already knew, I know a lot of ladies have babies and then like they want to stay home. That wasn't like when COVID hit, Alana was 6 weeks old or something. So I ended up having a little bit, but I had someone quit. So I had to go back to work early and I was kind of bummed about it. And then I got back to work and I was like, oh yeah, I love working.
Just so not for someone else, right?
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, if my husband didn't have to work, like he would totally stay home with Alana all day. But I love working and it brings me, and I love catering and I just love my job. So for me, it brings me so much personal satisfaction. Like I just couldn't stay home all day. It's not my thing, but I love her and I still, you know, carve out a lot of time of the week to spend with her. I just have to do it in a different way, but because I have my own company, I can do that.
What I wanted to ask was going back to being a woman in business, particularly in the food industry, you have to have relationships with food suppliers, right?
Yeah.
And that generally is a male dominated industry as well. At least in my experience with logistics, it's mostly men. Have you had an issue at all with, well, at least at the very beginning, now that you've got traction and everybody knows who you are, it's, maybe you've got a lot more pull and push, but at the beginning, did you find it difficult getting those contracts for the supplies that you needed at a cost you felt like was more competitive than it should have been, less competitive than it should have been?
No, I didn't. I mean, I don't, you know, my big suppliers like US Foods, I did have like a, you know, my first US Foods rep was a good old boy, but he loved me and we had a good relationship and he retired and is driving around on his motorcycle enjoying life. I haven't had many issues in terms of sexism that have come to me through either purchasing or like through vendors. I mean, I've had people like I've been on site at an event and I'm sitting next to one of my employees and I've had, you know, clients be like, oh, great job, chef, like to the man who was next to me, even though I was like in the head chef coat.
Oh, wow.
So it's, you know, and I'm just like, well, that was sexist. Like I own this company, but thank you very much.
So many stereotypes out there and just assumptions I think that people make. And you know what? I think, you know, you went through Aviatra, I guess is what they want to be called.
Yeah, Aviatra.
But they are specifically to help women, right? And I feel like there's a lot of support here for women-owned businesses. And I think, you know, people assume that there's going to be this challenge, I think, to being able to start a business if you're a minority, if you're a woman. But in my experience as an investor and someone who sits in on a lot of these, you know, accelerator meetings, they need more minorities to come forward and start businesses. There is a huge demand for that right now. And I think it's, you know, the overall community here and probably in a lot of other places too, is underserved when it comes to that.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the thing that, and again, you know, my own privilege. I'm very lucky. My parents have owned a business. I was able to get a line of credit, but I have friends who, like, I have a friend who was trying to start a distillery and she could not, no one would lend her the money. And then these other guys were doing a distillery, like, in a weird place, and they got the money easily secured. So, and it was, you know, hers is in the middle of OTR. She got, she ended up getting the money, but she had to really fight for it for a long time. So, and she had the collateral and she had the building and she had everything. And people, so I think with women, you know, it's where that, I that's where the sexism comes in. I think it's in those big, trying to get those big deals done. And I don't know what it is, that they think that the women can't do it or aren't going to be able to vouch for it or what it is. But, you know, I haven't had an issue with that, but I haven't had to borrow a lot of money to start my business. But I mean, I think that's where a lot of women, especially minority women, you know, women of color, things like that. You know, those are some of the stories that I've heard from fellow AVHRA graduates who have had issues securing funding.
But that's not something that you feel like people should be aware, right, that these kind of things are going to come up. But if you have a great mentor, someone like Carlin, who's on your side, I think that really helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, definitely having someone, you know, having an advocate on your side, I mean, having contact, having, you know, all those things are helpful. But, you know, I don't know how, if they're lending a lot of money right now, like if someone wants to start a business and that's a woman owned small business, like, I don't know what the chances are of a bank lending you a lot of money to do that. Even if it's only $50,000 or $100,000, like, you know, I don't know.
But you don't take no for an answer and just be done with it. Like, I think a lot of people get, you know, they feel like, you know, they get offended because the bank wouldn't loan them money, or they feel, you know, it just brings them down, or they say, oh, I didn't get the money because of this. So, you know, the next person's not going to give me money because of the same thing.
Right. I mean, you're going to find a bank. You're just going to take a while. So, and like Huntington Bank here, I know does a lot of small business stuff. And you have to just find a bank, I think, that's willing to work with small businesses.
How did that start out for you? How did you initially capitalize your business?
We were all self-funded. I did not borrow any money to do it. We had some savings. We were working full time and I was using extra money for that and then just customer deposits to buy things. So I didn't get any, I think people always assume like my parents gave me a bunch of money and I didn't get any money from my family. So we were self-started and self-funded. I think I got a line of credit maybe 2 or 3 years in to help me with larger purchases. But yeah, we just did it all by the bootstraps.
And now that you're, again, award-winning, what hats do you wear for the company? Are you everything? Or have you a little stratosphere there where it's like, okay, I'm going to allow this person to do purchasing, or I'm going to allow this person to do marketing, or do you do it all?
That's a good point too, that's a tough decision to make. Like, who do I want to put in charge of the money?
How did you find them?
So about 5 or 6 years ago, you know, I had to make the decision. We were getting too big. People still think I cook everything, which is hilarious because I'm like, am I an octopus? I'm like cooking, I'm answering the phone, I'm getting water. Like, I people are like, you didn't cook all of my food? I'm like, I didn't cook any. So I don't cook anymore. I basically had to make the decision, was I going to be the head chef or was I going to be the CEO and salesperson? And I'm really good at selling. I didn't even know that about myself, but I'm a good salesperson and I can sell the best. I'm my face. I'm the face of the business and the brand of the business. And so for me, you know, if I can be out there selling, then my chef can cook, have something to cook. So if I'm not selling, no one's cooking. So I guess 4 or 5 years ago, I decided that I was going to go ahead and kind of release that duty. And so now I am still the CEO. I do all the financials. I have an accountant, but I do like to, I am one of those weird people who still loves numbers as well. So I do like my daily accounting, but I basically meet with like all the big clients. I handle all the corporate stuff. I still do the scheduling, but I do have staff members who can figure out. I still help with the ordering. I still like to have a handle on sort of everything and what's happening. but like my operations duties, I have a COO. Right now I have two other event specialists who also sell events as well, two people in operations, and then depending on the year and the season, 6 to 10 people in the kitchen.
Do you do all the catering events too? Like, do you have to be there, or since you have
have to be there. Basically, I do all the big ones. This year's kind of a weird year because of COVID, but with having the baby and stuff, like, I don't want to do 30 weddings a year. I'll probably do 15 or 20 next year, but we'll book two between Jenna is, my other event specialist, and she's been with me for 3 or 4 years. So her and I split the weddings. But I just hired a third one. So now we'll split the weddings between the three of us. So the weddings and like big corporate events. So I don't do the small events. The best way to say it is the more money you spend, the more likely it is that I'm going to show up at your event.
Exactly. Well, that's one of the problems
like
my
the
wife.
Big spenders.
Well, that's one of the problems my wife has with her business. She's, she owns a spa and everyone wants to work with her. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's hired people in the past and people are like, oh, she was okay. I just really like working with you. Do you get
trust
that a
the
lot?
Face right. of the business?
Yeah. I mean, Jenna and I, like, we do stuff like almost exactly the same now. And it's funny because the new girl we're training, we're like, this is how we do it. Like, if you listen to one of our wedding phone calls, Jenna and I say almost the exact same thing. We don't have a script, but like, this is just how we do it. We know it works. We know like
we
this is how
system.
It goes. And yeah, there's a system to it and we have a system to everything and we know it works. And so, and people love her too. I mean, we kind of look alike too, which is helpful, but yeah, I mean, I try and do just things that are really complicated that I want to make sure are a high dollar client. If you're having like a 20 person rehearsal dinner, like I don't need to come and hang out with you on a Thursday night. But people are funny because they're like, oh, are you going to deliver my corporate lunch? I'm like, no, I'm not going to deliver your corporate lunch, but someone on my team will and it'll be great. You have to take that. You have to decide when to cut it off and then train your people to do it exactly how you want it to be done.
Right. So you've created, we talked about systems in the first and second podcast. And you've inadvertently, kind of out of necessity so that you could have some sort of life. Have created systems with Jenna, and now you're training another assistant, event planner to do the same, have the same exact system so that you're actually establishing a company that can grow organically with demand, because it's basically, I don't know that you have a manual written down, but in your head you have the manual. Jenna knows the manual.
Oh, we have a manual. I have a amazing COO, Chelsea Linneman. She's also my sister-in-law, and I stole her from Fifth Third, and she used to manage their call center. And she is everyone should have an organizational like genius person who loves spreadsheets on their team. And Chelsea, we have manuals for everything. Every job has like, even now your dishwasher, like these are your duties. This is what you have to do. Because catering, catering is a completely, it's like 30% food and 70% logistics. So like, how are we going to get it there? What's it going to be packaged in? Will it travel well? So for us, having systems like is mandatory. Everything has a system, and some are more intuitive than others. Like being at a wedding and like running a wedding is more intuitive because you don't know what problem you're going to run into. But like the back of the house stuff, like, oh, we're going to pack all the platters and bubble wrap and then store them this way. And then the food gets heated this way and you log the temperature here, because we have to keep all the food safety records and things like that as well.
You were in Aviatra with other people who had technology businesses, I'm sure, right?
Technology wasn't huge then. I think some of them had technology business. None that I can really think of as exactly technology.
I feel like there's a shift now from, people were really big time investing several years ago in, SaaS type businesses, software as a service type businesses, where you build something and then, you get a sales team and you go out and you sell the thing and you could sell it a million times, right? And you don't really have to do a whole lot. I feel like there's a shift back to like real businesses. I mean, brick and mortar, producing some kind of service for people outside of just software. Do you get that? Or, I mean, how do you feel?
I mean, I think everyone wants custom. I mean, we're a completely custom caterer, but everyone now, I mean, especially with I mean, because of technology, everyone wants everything exactly how they want it. You know what I mean? Like they want, I mean, everything is custom. And I think so many of our people, other vendors and weddings, even like DJs and florists and, you know, everything, you're not making the same thing for every customer. Every customer wants it to have their signature. Like they lived in Chicago and Russia. And so they need vodka shots and hot dogs. Like, it's I feel like everything is very
white glove,
customized.
White glove bespoke type service where you take them by the hand and give them exactly what they want. You get that boutique feel to everything now.
Well, and we talked a little
nobody
bit about
cookie cutter.
Nobody wants cookie cutter, but we also talked about this with Blue North, the ladies from Blue North last week, where they said,
"Oh yeah, she's great."
Yeah, oh, they're awesome. They were talking, and they said the same thing about you, by the way. And
good.
But they said that every business is a technology business nowadays. Do you see technology
right, that
playing?
That is what they say. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like from what I'm hearing from you is that a lot of businesses are, even your business is becoming more of a technology business.
Yeah. I guess I don't know if I necessarily think about it that way, but yeah, I mean, you know, we're definitely figuring out ways to incorporate technology into our business. Like for people who don't need custom catering, we're going to have online ordering because not for like dinner. Well, you'll be able to pick up like frozen meals, but like, oh, I want some, you know, appetizers for my party and I just want to be able to bring them home and bake up. And we're going to have like take and bake appetizers and like things like that. So you can still customize it to yourself, but you can just order it online and come pick it up in like, you know, on Friday afternoon or something like that.
So what are
people having parties now, right? But they don't really want to tell you they're having parties.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you would tell young Mavis now? What are some of the things you would have, if you could go back in time and meet yourself 7 years ago, what would you tell yourself about your business and starting a business?
I did exactly how I needed to go to get to where I am today. I'd probably take better care of yourself, I guess, because I mean, I'm doing great, but you know, when you're young and you start a company, you just don't pay attention to yourself and you just like get into the business and get into everything and smoking too much and drinking too much and doing all this stuff. So like, you know, I probably tell myself to take better care of myself.
That's actually a good point. Yeah. I would do the same thing. Yeah.
That's an extremely underrated aspect of doing anything.
I wasn't expecting
with a high stress position. Now everyone's all about self-care.
But I wasn't expecting you to answer that way. But when I think about it too, I'm like, yeah, like I don't have time to like get on a treadmill and do this and that, you know, and I'm, you know, in my 40s now. It's stuff that you need to be doing. And you don't think about that because, yeah, you're right. A lot of people do start these businesses in maybe their 20s or early 30s. And, you know, they feel like they're fine. Yeah, I'm in great health. I'm good. But then next thing you know, you're sitting behind a computer 7-8 hours a day. And you're not doing a whole lot and you're not necessarily paying attention to you and your mental health even and your physical health. That plays into your success as a business owner and also the way you present yourself to customers.
Well, I was working 50 hours a week and then going to law school at night. And I went from, I think I started law school at like 210 pounds. By the time I graduated, I was close to 248.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was just, and I was still working out, but I don't think people need to understand more along the lines of what happens with your body under stress, the effects that cortisol has, what the impact it has, particularly if you drink to kind of relax or if you smoke, relax, and you start messing with, you know, the hormone balances in your body, not to mention eating like crap, because a lot of times you're running from, I don't know what your lifestyle was like, Mavis, but I'm assuming you were running from the kitchen to
site. Oh, yeah, you're eating fast food. Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm just eating whatever's available. You're just, like, throwing it in your mouth.
Popping cheese squares in your mouth and, like, pepperoni.
Right,
you're just
exactly.
Drinking Diet Coke at, like, 9:30 at night so you can't go back to sleep.
Oh, right. You're slamming coffee all day. I mean, now I have one cup of coffee a day, and one of my chefs is like, that's all you have a day? I'm like, yep, I have one giant mug of coffee a day, and that's all I get.
Judging by your voice, I don't think you need another cup of coffee. You seem like you got a ton of energy.
As she was talking about coffee, my leg is shaking.
I don't need the extra caffeine, but yeah, like moving from being a chef to deciding to be in the office, I mean, I gained 20 pounds because I wasn't on my feet all day. but being a chef in the kitchen's bad for you too. Like your knees hurt, all that shit. So like, you know, there's not really a good way to win. Like I went to chiropractor for my neck today from staring at the computer. So, you know, there's always something no matter which choice I had made. But
what would be one of the, so looking back, if somebody starts a business just in general, not necessarily a catering business, but yeah. What are one of, who's one of the first people you want to hire? Like, what do you want to take care of to kind of take some of the pressure off you to allow you to run your business? And you always hear that saying, you need to work on your business, not in your business. So who would you suggest people start to look at, or what, even if it's like a part-time gig person, what should people look for?
Yeah, that's funny. Because I had a mentee, someone who was renting my kitchen, and she was like dying. And I was like, girl, if you feel like you're going to die, it means it's time for you to hire somebody. Yeah. Because I feel like small businesses wait until they're like, they feel like they're just going to die and their life's going to end starting this business. I'm like, that's when you hire someone. And I always suggest like starting with people to do the easiest things that you can just like get off of your plate. And I guess it's going to vary based on the business. Do you care about, like, do you want them to do social media? Do you want them to package your product? Do you want them to cold call? You know, I feel like it'll kind of depend on your business. For me, it was help in the kitchen because, like, I don't want to wash the dishes and cook all the food and deliver the food. And, you know, I just needed kitchen help with my first person I hired. And I still handled all of the office and tasks for myself. But, you know, I wouldn't suggest hiring someone to do the money right off because you don't know that person. Madam, so keep your money yourself and yeah. Let someone else do the other things. But yeah, I mean, I think just like your most basic tasks, and sometimes people are like, well, I can't afford it. I'm like, well, if it affords you 5 hours of your life back to do something else or call those really important people that you need to call to get more business, then that's, you know, that's what you need to do. Like I said, like if I'm not selling, then who is? Like no one's cooking. So
the time
you
value
know, if you need to go sell your product, then have someone else do the back end and you go sell it.
The time value of money. How much is your time yes. worth? Like how much is an hour of your life worth? A lot of people don't think of it in that way. They
right.
think about
and
the
I
actual
definitely
money.
Think of it that way.
And there's
right.
a, there's an opportunity yeah. cost to everything. Like, I mean, you know, is it worth, if you can get someone in there for $12 an hour or $15 an hour, is your hour worth more than $15? If it is, then you need to go ahead and hand that task off to someone else. And I correct. Mean, you're trying to sell the business. I mean, are you doing any kind of advertising or how do you find customers?
We don't do a ton of advertising. We are very lucky to have great word of mouth, but we do advertise for our wedding. And actually we do advertise in Edible Ohio Valley now. Kind of our client base. And then The Knot, that's like the only place where I spend money. And every now and then on Facebook for certain things. But The Knot is where, if people don't know what The Knot is, it's where people who are newly engaged go to find like all of their vendors and timelines and what they should do and what they should spend and all of that stuff. We've won Best of The Knot. We're now Lifetime winner Best of The Knot award. And so that has been, you know, I would say amazing for us because so many people find us through that service.
So and continue year, doing a good job. What it sounds like too, since you don't really have to advertise, it's because you're delivering. And if you constantly deliver on your client's expectations, you know, my understanding and my experience is that they're going to be your best advertisers.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for us, like, I was talking to Jenna, my other salesperson, and I was like, you know, we don't really, like, we don't do cold calling. We don't do anything. And we haven't really needed to. I mean, the pandemic, we tried to reach out to our corporate people, but no one's in the office anymore. So when they come back, we'll do that. But even our corporate people, when they come back, they call us again because they're back in the office. So yeah, for us, like, really making sure. And if we mess up, like, if there's something that happens, you know, the whole team, I'm not like, we make a mistake and we have to learn from it and kind of talk to everybody about that. And there's no point in screaming. I'm not like a screaming chef. Like, we messed up. Okay, shit. What can we do to fix it? And how do we never do it again? And then we put all those protocols in place to make it happen. So our team does really good at delivering consistent, reliable, delicious food and service. And then going that extra mile, which for us is what really puts us over the top and which our clients really, you know, I say, if there's anything you can do at an event to make us go over the top, just do it. We're there already. Just make it happen so that our clients will rave about us and that brings us more business.
Do you have like an in-house contract? Do you have like any facility or reception hall or convention center, something like that, where you're the only person that they can basically go through for catering?
I don't have one where I'm the only one, but I have many, I don't know, probably 25 venues that we're one of, you know, 3 to 5 people that people can choose from to cater. And those people do send us a ton of business. And the places that we're at a lot love us, and then they rave about us and tell the clients as well. So that is another way that, you know, we don't advertise, but it's word of mouth. So like Ryan Geist loves us. The Marmalade Lily loves us. We're on the parks list. You know, we do lots of these smaller venues as well. And if they love us and they keep us on their list, you know, then we have a pretty good chance of getting business from that.
You know, it'd be awesome for your marketing is that for the public events that you're catering, is if you had on your website, do you list when you guys are catering a public event?
No, we didn't, but we could do that.
Because if you get a loyal fan base, which I'm sure you're going to, third time I'm going to say it, but you're award winning. I think that would be an awesome way to get some groundswell is if people knew, okay, I wasn't sure about going to this event, but the food's going to be amazing. So it's going to be worth my time going and meeting new people.
Yeah.
I've been to a lot of events where I'm not too sure about how the food's going to be. And when I do get really good food, I'm actually surprised by the fact that I got good food.
Well, I mean,
right.
She could turn it into like people should be hiring her, not just for the food for people that are there, but to bring people, like bring her fans to their event.
Because she's established a quality brand.
It's a night out. So even if this event's garbage, even if it's boring as hell, I know that the food's going to be amazing. So I'm going to go and we give it the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. When we were doing a lot of corporate events, we did have stuff like that, you know, because we did a lot for law firms and a lot for, you know, just larger parties that you can't, it's just crazy because we can't do any of the stuff that we would normally do like that, like those big public events. So, but once those come back, I'm confident that will continue, you know, that snowball effect.
So Mavis, we got you for a couple more minutes here. And I want to leave people with wisdom from your years of being a business owner and from jumping over hurdles. And it sounds like logistics is a nightmare for you, but what are some of the things you could leave an aspiring business owner with who maybe has a side hustle out there and doesn't have either the confidence or just isn't sure if they should leave their 9-to-5 job to get something off the ground? What would you say to them?
Couple things. One, fake it until you make it. Definitely. Like when I first started, my mom went to my first wedding walkthrough with me because I was like, I don't know what to do, mom. I got to figure out how this wedding is. And she went and helped me and then it didn't help me again, but you got to fake it until you make it. And no one knows that you don't know completely what you're doing. So just make it work. And then the next thing I would say is like, everything's just going to go wrong and it's going to hit the fan and it's all going to happen at the same time. The best way to deal with it is to laugh about it and to move on, because if you sit and dwell in it, it's just going to ruin. You know, I think my team would say that, you know, no matter what's happening, I will smile and I will laugh and we'll figure it out. But there's no point in sitting around crying about it. There's no crying in catering, as I like to say. But, you know, stuff's going to happen and that's okay. And you'll figure it out. But if you're positive about it, like the good things, I'm a believer in karma and I believe it will come back around. You know, like be determined. And if you're going to start a business, make sure you love it so much that you want to do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So if you want to make like beer cheese, you better love beer cheese so much that like that's all you want to do. Because I think sometimes I was working with these entrepreneurs and they were all trying to find a business that they wanted to do. And they all just kept doing all things they thought people wanted and problems they were trying to solve. And I'm like, why are you trying to solve a problem? Why don't you find something you love and then start a business around it? Because people will know that you love it and that you put your heart and soul into it and that you've done your best to make them whatever amazing thing it is. Like for me, it's food and weddings and seeing that everything come together. But you know, if you don't love it so much, you want to do it all the time of your entire life, like, then that's not the business for you. You need to find a new one.
Nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Right. Correct.
Thank you for your time, Mavis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
You're an inspiration for young business people out there, even if you don't realize it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This has been fun.
Yes.
I haven't got to tell my whole story in a long time, so you got to hear the spiel.
Well, I got to learn new things today that I didn't know before, so this is great.
All right,
Mavis.
Well, good. I'm so glad. Well, thanks, guys. Have a great day.
To motion to adjourn.
Second.